Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. At some point, John and Sandy are going to figure out how to turn the cameras on. There they are, look.
Hey.
Yeah, the technology works. We are currently live on Facebook, Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube. Thank you to everybody that's joining us live on there now. Please get involved in the comments. We did that last week. It was good fun, wasn't it, Sandy? We kind of picked up a couple of comments and good bit of interaction. Hello to Andy, who is watching us live on YouTube. Tonight we've got John. I made John sign up to this podcast before Edinburgh versus Ulster, so he couldn't duck out of it. But I think Sandy's probably the one that's going to be regretting signing up to this beforehand. So we will talk about Edinburgh versus Ulster, but we're going to do a bit of a season recap as well for a bit of fun. So we're not putting Sandy through too much torture and pain. You can listen to this podcast on most podcast apps. You can watch us live and then watch us back on the place I mentioned before. If you visit scottishrugbyblog.co.uk/scottishrugbypodcast, I think, then you'll find us. But if you just go to the blog site, you can find the drop down menu. There's all the details of the podcast there. And we're on Twitter at Scott Rugby Blog. I'm at Cammy Black. Facebook is Scottish Rugby Podcast because somebody, John, got us banned from Facebook with the blog page. We are also on Twitch, Scottish Rugby Podcast as well. We've started up in the last couple of months our own Patreon page. So for £3 a month, you can enter the Richie Vernon Thunderdome, where you can get access to ad-free episodes of the podcast, as well as we are trying to commit to doing one Patreon-only episode a month and maybe a little bit more than that as well. But we'll at least do one special Patreon-only episode a month. We have had a couple out. Ian and I did a Q&A where we answered some important questions about pizza and quiche, John.
We did.
So you're gonna have to pay money to do that. To hear that. We also talked about in that podcast, we talked about the potential of a third Scottish pro team in some detail. And then this month's special is the history of rugby sevens. It's a podcast I did with Tony Collins, who is the rugby sports historian, and Lee from the Blood and Mud podcast. We did that as a bit of a joint venture. It was mainly, I will be honest, me moaning about Edinburgh bias in Scottish rugby for about an hour. And how great the borders are. There's a bit of a dig into the history of rugby, early history of rugby and the borders as well. So a lot of interesting things to cover. If you pay £5 per month, though, then you will not only get access to the Richie Vernon Thunderdome, but you get access to the Doogie Donnelly Members Lounge. So thank you very much to Rory Kemet, who has paid £5. As a bonus, not only do you get us to take off your coat, not literally, just in your mind. Imagine us, we take your coat, put in the cloakroom, give you a wee ticket, come and get your drinks order, sit you down beside some of the other people that are in there. But Rory Kemet, thanks to him, he's upped his pledge. He was too cold, I think, on the sidelines of the Richie Vernon Thunderdome and has paid an extra £2 a month to come into the warmth. So thank you very much for that, Rory. We're very grateful for that. On the Patreon, we've got some plans for October. We are going to do across the blog and the podcast and then a Patreon special. We're going to look at the hardest men in Scottish rugby. So we're going to put that to some sort of public vote. And I put a wee thing on Twitter tonight, and I think that the debate is going to rage on about this over the months. It's going to be quite a lot of fun. We've had obviously you've got Jim Telfer, Ian Milne, David Leslie. Who else have we had? There's a couple of older them. We've actually had some. It's David, I'll get the right name of this, David Bedell Sivright, who used to wrestle horses. I think fought in the First World War, so that's going to be interesting as well. Anyway, who's your initial thought, John? I see hardest man of Scottish rugby. Your initial thought on that?
Jason White came to mind immediately.
Yeah, Sandy. You, I mean, you're a different generation. Without being too rude, Sandy, you're a bit different generation to John. I think this is, I think this is where the debate's going to rage. Is we're going to get? I think you'll get a different answer from depending on when people.
Yeah.
We're of a certain. I think probably your teenage and early 20s probably forms your views on who's a hard man in rugby, because that's when you come to the sport. Who have you got? Who would you go for?
Yeah, well, playing up to that stereotype, I'll it's got to be the likes of Jim Jeffrey, Finn Calder. Finn Calder in particular, I think, for me. I can't remember. I've forgotten his name already, but there was a. I think I mentioned a chap to you before who. Him and his family escaped the Nazis in World War II from Holland. I think that has to qualify as being pretty hard, to be honest. Yeah. As well.
Yeah, I will say we're giving it quite a wide definition of what hard means. So it can be anything. We're leaving that open to your own interpretation. It can be someone that fought hard on the pitch. It can be someone who overcame adversity off the pitch. There's lots of stories of Scotland. So hard doesn't have to mean someone that tackled hard and played hard. It could be anything. Just the hardest man in Scottish rugby, the hardest player, even we'll open up, hardest player in Scottish rugby. So it could be a woman player, a female player as well. So we'll take all the nominations in due course. Keep an eye on everything. Ron Wilson's come in. We had a lot of calls for this. It's struck us, no debate.
It's fair enough.
That's a fair call.
I know you're moving on, but I've actually just remembered somebody that probably should be mentioned up there is the former Stirling County hooker, Kevin McKenzie. Who was about the square foot of nothing, but was just the hardest guy I've ever played against, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So I'll keep the story for the Patreon, but he was as hard as they come.
I'm quite happy to open up to club nominations as well. It doesn't have to be internationals, just, you know, the hardest person that's played in Scotland.
I think he was a B-cap, so it probably counts.
We've got a bit before we get to Edinburgh Ulster and then a bit of a season recap. We've got some news to go through. It's rumoured that there's been no official confirmation. I don't think there's even been an official confirmation of this autumn tournament of rugby that there's going to be either. I think there's been an announcement that there's plans for one, but no formal announcement of what that's going to look like. But the rumour is that Japan are out because of COVID, but Georgia are in. John, it doesn't really affect Scotland because I think they're in England's pool.
Yeah, there was rumours today that the pools are going to switch as well. Fiji are going to move into Scotland's pool, and Georgia will be in England's pool. So it might end up impacting us. To be honest, I mean, it's Georgia should have been in there in the first place, really. And I think the shout for Japan was, you know, obviously they'd held a very successful World Cup. There was plenty of money coming from that direction. But realistically, Georgia, it's a great opportunity for Georgia to get a good run of competitive fixtures against those kind of tier one nations, isn't it? So, no, happy with that.
Yeah. Are you, good shout, Sandy, or is this, it's pragmatic, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was going to be difficulties with the way things are with Japan and I think even South Africa mentioned as well. But, and I think John's right. I think the big thing is that Georgia will be loving this opportunity because, you know, if they have a good showing, then they've just strengthened their argument, you know, by 50%, 100% to come into the, you know, an expanded Six Nations or have somebody drop out. But we'll see how they do when they get here.
I mean, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? When we're talking about an expanded Six Nations, is it's taken coronavirus to get us to this point where they're tearing up the rugby calendar and looking at new things. But this could be, you know, even once coronavirus has been, we're at a position where it's we can get on with our lives and return to normal whenever that may be, that rugby in the format that we understood it in terms of the calendar is probably no more realistically, because to have an 8-team tournament in the autumn, however you structure that, whatever you do, I mean, that's going to be attractive to all the unions if you can play that, and in, you know, an international tournament, not a World Cup, but once a year, John.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's taken unprecedented circumstances to generate an unprecedented solution to the global calendar issue. And I think we just have to see how it goes. I think there'll always be the calls for keeping things the way they are, because it works for some. And, you know, there's obviously growing pressure on players, player welfare, the amount of minutes, you know, people are playing down south in particular. But I think if there's an opportunity for us to really kind of showcase international rugby, and that's, you know, that small window, because it's a bit longer than, say, you know, your kind of traditional Autumn Internationals, it starts to mean a wee bit more to the kind of casual fan. They start seeing it on the television every other week, or, you know, and start tuning in and thinking, oh, you know, Scotland are doing okay. And that can convert fans. If you've only got a game on now and then, you're never really going to capture that casual supporter. So I think it's a good opportunity. And again, we just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing for me, Andy, Sandy. I think the format that's proposed kind of, it keeps everybody happy for me, because it still preserves the idea of tests and one-off tests. But what it says is that at the end, the last weekend is reserved for, let's just see, you know, who's won the most matches and get the top two teams, and then the next two teams, and then down, and everyone plays each other in the last weekend. But so it kind of, in a way, everyone's happy. You get your one-off tests, but there is something meaningful at the end of it, almost as a celebration of what's gone before, in a way.
Yeah. I think the only, perhaps the only sticking point is that traditionally that time of the year, there's usually somebody travels to New Zealand, and that's not obviously going to happen, or vice versa. They come up here. But it's certainly going to be more attractive to the TV companies. I mean, you can see at the moment it's obviously... autumn tests are spread all over the place. Some are live, some are on Sky, some are on the beat. And because obviously I don't think the TV companies see an awful lot of attraction in one-off tests, whereas a competition with the winners and losers that comes with that is obviously much more up their street. And as you say, to the casual fan who may tune in because there's something to be, they see something to be played for. So that, you know, it could make a difference that way as well.
I mean, this is the man, Andrew Lone, or Andy Lone on YouTube's brought this comment up, and he's read my mind, because I've got this on the notes anyway, which is, you know, asking what our thoughts are on the fact that Amazon Prime might be interested in the broadcasting right for the Eight Nations tournament. That was, I think, reported in the Daily Mail today.
Yeah,
but it's been rumoured for a while. I mean, for me, I can see the attraction from an Amazon point of view. You see the attraction you get you get access to Amazon Prime by just because you want your parcels quicker. Do you know what I mean? So a lot of people have access to Amazon Prime, not because they want to watch the TV that comes with it, but because they want to get the parcels in a day and free delivery. Yeah. So they've probably got quite a big market there. They could probably attract a few casual viewers in. It's what, I think it's $7.99 a month, which you're not talking your Sky, whatever it is for your Sky day pass, which is something ridiculous. Was it 25 quid a day?
Yeah. 20 quid.
£20 a day for Sky Day Pass. So you probably, you know, you're looking at spending upwards of what, 80 quid if there's four Scottish tests in the autumn. With Sky this way, it's £7.99, so it's a bit more affordable. I know some people were saying, you know, not everyone's got unlimited broadband and stuff, so there's that. But I think it feels to me like a nice middle ground. And I'm not just saying that because I've got an Amazon Prime account, but, you know, cards on that. I've got to declare my vested interest here. But you're not, a lot of people will be signed up to it already. You're not having to sign to a long-term contract. It's $7.99 probably for the month. And from Amazon's point of view, the reason they can fund that, and I think this would be the controversial point, is if you're watching the rugby, then your Amazon recommendations are going to be all rugby autobiographies and rugby DVDs. That's where they get you. They're going to harvest your data at the same time. But I think it was, I can't remember who it was. It was someone on the comments on the Scottish Rugby Forum, maybe Martin Clark even, was saying, well, look, yeah, there is all that. But in return, you've got to see it as the money's going to your union. In these cash-strapped times, if Amazon are willing to play big bucks to broadcast this, for the sake of Amazon recommending you a few rugby books, and it ruined, you know, then would you do that if the money's then going to the SRU to fund, to keep them afloat? John, I mean, I know that, you know, there's other issues with Amazon about workers' rights and stuff, and we can bring that in if you want to, but I don't know. I think any company apart from maybe the BBC, but people might have issues there as well, are going to be kind of ethically pure.
Yeah. I think if you're making your television consumption choice based on a level of morality like that, then you're probably going to be staring at a wet washed wall that's not even been painted. I watch a lot of the tennis on Amazon Prime, and I've got to say that the quality of the coverage has really improved in terms of the streaming. I don't have very fast internet. I'm on quite a reasonable connection, and the quality is really good. So I'm quite interested. I'm always interested to see kind of, you know, it's interesting to think of Amazon as a disruptor in this element. And, you know, Sky have had such a monopoly on the kind of pay for sports for so long. And then BT obviously got involved. I think it's just great to see companies coming in and just changing things up. And if it drives down the prices for the rest of us, for paying for rugby, then I'm happy to see that. But the price that they're paying to the SRU or any of the other unions is not going to go down. Their rights are valuable, and that it's going to be treated as such, especially with more competition. So, although we've got Ryan Cabane's coming in, prime in my opinion, very successful with the football. This might be a great thing for rugby. Yeah, I have to agree.
Yeah, Sandy, I mean, your take on this. I mean, it's like John said, it's, you've got people like Sunset and Vine. I know they've, you know, no longer associated with Premier Sports, but there are these production companies that will be used to working with rugby that they could, you know, Amazon can pull off the shelf and get them to come and work with them. So that you might not necessarily see a significant drop in quality. It's just the same. It's essentially the same companies just being contracted to do it by somebody else, isn't it?
I missed the start. I don't know if you were addressing that to me, Cam. I missed it. We froze for a second, but
I was addressing it.
No, I don't think there's any problem with that. I mean, I think we're in a situation now that if you expect you're going to get all the sports on BBC, you're kind of kidding yourself on. They're not going to. They don't have the money to bid for that. The big companies can outbid them every day of the week. I mean, you see all the time folk clamouring for the Pro 14 to be back on BBC and BBC Alba. And, you know, the production values weren't great. There was only one game and seven were actually broadcast. I mean, you can now watch, I mean, for all that Premier Sports is a bit of a mess in some ways, you can watch every single game live. Mm. And if you're interested in the Pro 14, that's, you know, even if you only dip in and out of it, you know, that you've got a much better experience there. I don't know if I picked up on this, but I've never used Amazon Prime for watching sport. It's only just been, you know, movies and documentaries and such like. I take it there's a rewatch facility if once a live event's been.
Yep.
And that would be my only concern. And as long as, because sometimes, you know, it's like you can't watch it as live as you would like to, or and you want to maybe watch it back later. So as long as you can do that, I'm comfortable with it, to be honest. Yeah.
I mean, and if it's a facility to be able to watch, for example, the Italy tests, which are always hard to come by in this, you know, and even the France tests are sometimes hard to find in the UK, because, you know, you might be lucky it's on Sky or it's on a random French channel you can get through satellite. But the autumn tests, it's fine. You can watch the England tests, you can watch the Ireland, Wales and Scotland ones, but it was always a struggle to get the France and the Ireland ones.
Yeah.
So if it's going to be pulled together in one package and you could sit in an afternoon and watch test after test after test while dipping it out of them, then, you know, jobs are good. And you know, $7.99 a month.
You've got wee in, mate. You'll have to get the family packed away for that one.
Hey, they like the rugby. They like watching rugby with Daddy. I got a rugby ball for my birthday with Daddy written on it, which is a full-size one. It says Daddy on it. Now, obviously, in that context, I can only use that ball with my kids now. Because there's no way I can turn up to a game with adults with a ball that says Daddy on it, because that sends a very different message to people.
I think they like, own it, mate.
I think I've said before on the podcast, I think that luckily the youngest has got away from referring to it as watching Daddy's men's.
That's right.
which led to some very awkward conversations with his nursery. He tells us he's enjoyed watching Daddy's men's this weekend. It's the rugby. It's not nothing.
Honest, honest, Gov.
So I think that's
staying into getting banned territory here, guys. Easy up.
We face with Mark Zuckerberg, the wee red flashing light. They're at it again, boys. Where's the ban button?
Quick, get them.
In terms of, I don't think there's any other news other than that for the minute. I think we're all good, Sandy. The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of many things.
Yeah.
To talk of Embra and Ulster. I mean, I think we can touch on it briefly because I think it might be, I'm not sure there's much to say about it. It was a really bright first half, and then Ulster got the momentum in the second. The big talking point, probably, and the only thing, the thing worth talking about, I think, is the fact that they ended up in that position, because how many times, not just Edinburgh, you know, Glasgow, Scotland, this isn't an Edinburgh problem. It's not a Glasgow problem. It's a problem that Scottish rugby have, and it's surprising that, I suppose, from, you know, I know it's, you know, it's the first semi, and Richard Cockle talks about this as a project, but it's surprising that it wasn't something that was anticipated, and that we find ourselves in this position yet again.
Yeah, and John and I had a bit of a chat about earlier on the week, and the word choke was used, and I obviously denied it strenuously, but as the days have passed, I've actually come around to thinking that that's almost exactly what happened. It's, you know, I even wrote it down, a breakdown in performance when expected to excel, and that, you know, but I think something we're maybe getting a wee bit, or being a bit harsh, because the game didn't, I mean, albeit that Ulster obviously had the upper hand in the second half, the game itself wasn't hugely different. It was only 5-0 on the board. The big problem was the number of chances that Edinburgh passed up, in particular the one at the start of the second half that after the Grant Gilchrist threw a kind of risky pass under his own posts and Bennett took off down the field. Now, if his pass inside had reached, I think it was Nick Groom, or if he'd kicked ahead and they just ran on it and scored, at that point it's 19-0. And quite frankly, the game is probably over at that point, because I don't think Ulster would have recovered from that. Instead, 4 minutes later, it's back to 12-7, and the pendulum has just swung entirely. Thereafter, it choke, yeah, they did. And I also think, to a certain extent, there was fitness issues someplace in one or two areas, that people weren't performing towards the end of the game as you would have hoped for. Now, that's understandable, but and when you're on the back foot, it becomes even harder to drag yourself up. I mean, the big example, I think, is Grant Gilchrist, who was the captain by that point. Two rucks in a row, he's a tackler. After the tackle, he goes to ground and should get up quickly, doesn't, and an Ulster player lies on top of him, and they get two penalties, and that settles the game. Now, the penalties are harsh, I think, because, I mean, I'm not quite sure what he's meant to do when he's got an Ulster prop lying on top of him. I mean, it's like, it's a bit like having giant haystacks, you know, sitting on
lie,
you. It's not gonna
lie back and think of Scotland. That's what
But in the way the laws are interpreted now, Frank Murphy was completely correct, but I don't think that would have happened in the first half. But at that point, I think he was done. I think his engine was finished. And to also expect him to be the captain in that last 10 minutes, which I honestly think as well is a bit inexplicable, that you've removed McAnally with 10 minutes to go and the game's so tight. I don't get that. I think that's a strange decision.
I'm going to come to John in a minute. I'm just interested on that point, Sandy. Do you think it was a selection problem? Because he didn't necessarily go with the players that he'd gone with in the first two games, the last two games against Glasgow. He brought back in Toulouse, for example. Now, it would seem to me that if you're treating those Glasgow games as a, you know, as almost your pre-season warm-ups going straight into a semi-final, that you stick with the players that you've given runouts to, rather than saying, oh, we need Ben Toulouse, you know, we're going to rush Ben Toulouse back. Was that an issue, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, the line-out functioned like 100% perfectly. I don't think they lost a single one. And it wasn't so much that Ben Toulis wasn't fit. I think he was, as you would expect, somebody who hasn't played in 8 months. And that was probably a gamble that was worth taking. But unfortunately, what that meant was that Grant Gilchrist was always destined to have to play the full 80 minutes because we didn't have, really too many options in the second row. I think Rory Sutherland looked an awful lot better than what Per Schuurman did. He had a minimal impact. And I don't think that Bill Mata had much of an impact either in the entire match, never mind the second 40. And for me, maybe not a matter of fitness, but I would definitely have had Luke Crosby in before Magnus Bradbury, because I don't, as much as Magnus is a hard runner, he doesn't really, he's not got the eye for a gap of any description whatsoever. It's all very upright and bash into people, and there's no guile to it at all. I don't think I've ever seen him pass the ball, maybe once in two seasons. So you're not getting a pass there, and that, I think that hurts.
I saw that. It was like, you get these weird...
Sounds as if I've been really, really hard on them.
I'm going to get John to make you feel better in a minute. But the I think that Magnus Bradbury thing reminds me of a thing that kind of always winds me up on Facebook. I saw it the other day. It's just, there's a photo of three kids walking through thick snow, and it said, "Remember when we used to walk to school?" I'm thinking, well, kids still walk to school. And, remember when we used to get given heroin as kids to cure the common cold? We were all better for it and stuff like that. And somebody put the other day, and it was a rugby one, and I actually agreed with it, is, do you remember when you tried to beat your man rather than run through him? That's just something to be said for that, John, I'm going to get you to make, I'm going to put you, you're in your Glasgow Warriors shirt tonight.
I am, yes.
A bit cruel, but there we go. Is it, what season is that from? Is that the Pro 14 winning shirt? Is it?
That's the
Pro 12 winning shirt.
Not quite. No, it's the season after.
Well, there you go.
Would that not be threadbare, that one? No.
No, it's all good, mate.
Kevin Miller on Twitter made a very good point. I think this might make Sandy feel slightly better, that the Glasgow team that won the Pro 12 had been building for a while. It didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen quickly. So this is, if you're taking a long-term view, this is part of a process for Edinburgh. And I suppose even that Glasgow team, you look at it and you've got the likes of, you've got a good mixture of older heads like your Al Kellogg's, and then you've got, Finn Russell's probably, on his second season as a pro?
Second season as pro, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, it's something that takes time, and maybe, it's not that we're thinking too much of Edinburgh, but this is part of a process.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And for all the winding up I've been doing, there is the achievement Edinburgh have made this season to get to the semi-final in what has been, strange circumstances. It's something, it's a tick box for them now. They've done it. They now need to back it up next season. My only concern is that when Glasgow, and I think I've voiced this before, when Glasgow were building that team, a lot of that was flying under the radar. There was a lot of players who, there's experienced heads who maybe weren't on the radar of bigger clubs down south and bigger clubs in France. And then you had those young players coming through who were adding genuine first team quality straight away. With Edinburgh, my concern would be that the key players they have are on the radar for big clubs already. And the chance to build something that gets you to the level of a Leinster, I don't think that necessarily exists anymore. I think, especially in the current climate, I think clubs are going to be looking for a bargain at every given opportunity, and Scottish players will be a bargain for them. Guys like a Hamish Watson, a Mata, even, a Mark Bennett, potentially, guys like that will be on the radar for these clubs. So I really hope that Edinburgh do keep their team together, and it will be great to see both clubs competing at the, you know, the top ends of their conferences or whatever we end up with next season. You know, we might even end up with a straight up league. Who would imagine it? Eh? Whoa. But yeah, it was hard to see, because I obviously said that, you know, I put myself on the line and said that they would bottle it, and for all the laughing about it, I was disappointed to see it happen, because you know, I really did want them to do well. I'm also glad I'm right, because, you know, that is really important.
Scottish Rugby podcast, keeping it parochial since 2015. We'll move on. I don't want to dwell on it too much. There's your match report, Sandy, I think, covered it very well on the blog, so that's there for people to read. John's raised a couple of interesting points that probably feed into what we're going to do next anyway. When we're going to do, you know, the Pro 14's ended. I know Edinburgh is still in Europe. I'm not saying the season's over. You know, it's over for Glasgow. They're on the holidays, John.
Yep.
I'm going to make you feel a little bit worse about yourself for 2 minutes.
Back in pre-season training already, mate.
I know. Everyone's back in fat. How can you be back in fat camp after 2 days? Imagine the shame of that as a Glasgow player. But Edinburgh's still got Europe. We still haven't finished the Six Nations, so we've got a full season review to do at some point as it stands. But the Pro 14's over, so it's a good opportunity to maybe look forward and backwards at the same time and twirl around a little bit and get ourselves in a muddle. I've asked you to do this for Glasgow and Edinburgh respectively. I half had an evil thought of making you do it for each other, but I think that was probably given I only suggested this yesterday, I thought that's probably a bridge too far. Yeah. First award then. We've got no physical awards, just if anybody's listening to this and wants to, you know, pass on a hearty elbow bump or whatever you're allowed to do these days, then please do. Your MVP, so this is most valuable player for Glasgow and Edinburgh. Sandy, I'll start with you. Who's Edinburgh's MVP?
There's a choice for me, and obviously between Big Doohan and Luke Crosby, because I think an awful lot of what you would term the, you know, the big players were away for a long time, so I think you had to play a certain amount to be qualified. So those two, for me, and as I think that Luke Crosby would have made the difference for Edinburgh in the second half on Saturday, I'm going for Luke Crosby.
What is it about Luke Crosby then that you like? Is there something that, because he's not, I mean, he's been on the fringes of the Scotland team, but what is it, just that he, because he's been there and he's been putting in the hard work?
Yeah, I mean, it is. He's not a slacker by any manner of means, and he's hard. He's physical. He's a bit of a wind up merchant, a wee bit, but, you know, and he's in people's faces, and he's quite bizarrely, he's actually huge. I mean, I remember quite, you know, not that that's an attribute, but I just think he's somebody who appears to me to be really hungry to move. Upper rung, and I think is battering at the door all the time now. I know a lot of people will think there's not really much of a choice. It's always going to be Richie and Watson. He has played on both sides, so. But I think in any other team, probably at the moment, he would be starting. So, and I just think he's proved his worth in a season where most of your Watsons and your Richies were away an awful lot of the time with Scotland in the World Cup, etc.
Yeah, that's a good shout. John, Glasgow then, your MVP this season.
Yeah, so I think one player in particular was head and shoulders and quite literally in some cases above others. MVP this year for me was Big Xander, Zandbags himself. In terms of, I think this is the year that he's had criticism throughout his very, very young career regarding his technique, regarding his extracurricular activities on the park. And this was the season it kind of all started to come together. And he already looks every inch the world-class prop that he's going to be. I mean, Glasgow will not be able to keep him at Glasgow very much longer, because he is a real talent. So, yep, Xander for me.
24.
I know. He's a kid.
He made his debut for Scotland at 18.
Yeah.
And I think because he filled the gap, didn't he, at the time when Scotland was struggling for props.
Yep.
I don't think we gave him enough credit for that at the time because he was, I mean, you know, Sandy, his technique wasn't great, but I think that's maybe because he didn't, unlike maybe like Rory Sutherland's a good example of this. You know, Rory Sutherland came through the hard way that he had to go up against the older heads and be turned inside out and learn how to not do that. Whereas Sander Ferguson wasn't learning that in the Scottish Premiership. He's learning that on the international field at 18.
Yeah, and I was probably one of his biggest critics and got called out for it on Twitter by Xander himself. And then he went on for his man of the match against Edinburgh. So I'm sorry to the Edinburgh players for doing that. But I genuinely think he has come on leaps and bounds in the last. I mean, it's prop is always I mean, you can be a great wing forward at 23. You can be a fantastic standoff at 22. But generally, you don't become a great prop until your late 20s. And he's on his way already. And I think that's even before John said his name, I would have picked him. So maybe I could have done this the other way around.
Let's see how we go.
John, I'll stay with you then. Who's your most improved player for Glasgow then this season?
Yeah, so there was a couple of options here. For me, one of the real improvements I've seen was George Turner. The way George Turner has, so he still plays this squad player role where he's backup to Fraser Brown, and when Fraser Brown's available, he starts. But the impact that George Turner has every time he takes the field is second to none. He, you know, we joke that he runs like a centre. He's got pace to burn. He's so physical. And if I was, so I know it's been mentioned a few times, but if I was Richard Cockerell sitting on the other end of the M8, that's one that got away. He didn't fancy George Turner and sent him over the road. You know, he's improved immeasurably. And I think in terms of, you know, looking at things like his set piece as well, that's improved. He just looks more of a complete player. There was maybe a year ago where he was getting, so he was, you know, breaking into the international scene, you would have said he's a bit of a step down from Brown and from McAnally. Now it's not nearly as much as it was.
Mm. Yeah, and we saw him. We were at that Sale game, weren't we? When he scored that absolute worldie of a try, the line that he ran. So it's a good shout. Sandy, your most improved player for Edinburgh this season?
Rory Sutherland. Simple. Yeah. He's gone from being, you know, in a lot of injuries, effectively being third choice and being close to potentially not, you know, being a rugby player to being starting choice for Edinburgh, starting choice for Scotland, and being talked about as a British and Irish line. And I don't think you can see any further than that. He's turned everything around, and I think that's it can only be the one choice.
It's interesting that we've talked about props a lot on this podcast and on the blog over the years about the kind of lack of Scottish props, and all of a sudden we're hitting quite a rich vein of form in a way. And I think game time is definitely a big issue for them, because it's, you know, how do you give everyone enough game time to make sure everyone's fit and healthy enough to, you know, be available for Scotland, and also to keep the hand in to be good enough to take the step up. We've got Ollie Kebbles qualified now, I think. You've got Pierre Schumann's going to be qualified next summer. And I know maybe in the last couple of games, maybe the eye's been more on the Biltong business than it has been on Edinburgh. But
perhaps.
But you know, all of a sudden we're starting to build a wee bit of depth, and that's a good thing. Who's your one to watch, Sandy, for Edinburgh 2021? I've not done 2020-2021 season because I don't know what's happening. So we're just going to be one to watch for the next 12 months.
Next 2023. Season.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the Edinburgh squad is reasonably settled, but I think given that we only have one regular standoff, we're going to see Nathan Chamberlain once the regular season starts. So he's got to be the one. And I'm hoping that it works out for him. I hope it becomes it's another Hastings hidden away that coming through and taking the opportunity when the big guns are away or left to go and play in France or whatever it happens to be. And I think he's going to have to get game time because you can't expect Jacko to play every single game and every single minute, even if he stays fit. So that's my one to watch and to see how he gets on and hopefully flourishes and we've got even more choices when it comes to fly halves.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, coronavirus, John's given us it kind of forced the hand to play these players that maybe Ember wouldn't have even looked at Chamberlain as an option to even sign a couple of years ago. I mean, it's probably the same at Glasgow. You maybe get Stafford McDowell, might get a bit more game. Robbie Nairn, who are you going to put for your one to watch in 2021?
Yeah, so I think there's two people in particular that I can't really decide between the two. So the obvious one is Jamie Dobbie, who looks every inch the manor-born successor to Ali Price. And it's weird to say successor to George Horn, but, you know, George Horn's still a kid as well. And we've got this guy who is barely out in nappies behind him to, you know, come in. But he looked phenomenal at the start of this, you know, during the sort of the season gone by. And I think we were all expecting big things from him. But the other one for me, one to watch, it's a strange one, but Hugh Jones at fullback. let's throw Hugh Jones at fullback. Obviously, he said he quite enjoyed it. Said
what did he say? What did he say? No, did he not say it's not as hard as people make out?
Yeah, he suggested that he wasn't sure what everybody was moaning about when what all the fullbacks were moaning about where that it was actually quite easy. I love that confidence. That's class. So. But I mean, the game's against Edinburgh. For all the talk of how he was going to do, I think he looked relatively decent at fullback, and I think this might be what he needs to kind of kick on and it's adding something else to his game. You know, he doesn't have necessarily the most creative game. He's very skillful, but he doesn't have a creative game necessarily. And I think this opportunity might ask that of him, and that's only going to make him a better centre as well.
Yeah, no, that's a good shout. Sandy, can you get me, I'll give them both together, your season high and your season low for Ember. I mean, I'm guessing we've had your season low, have we?
Yeah, and literally really just the last 10 minutes, to be honest. I don't know what's worse, losing to Ulster or having Ian Madigan do the coup de grace, to be honest. That's probably the worst thing about it. Although, I mean, that is an obvious note. The not getting to, I was meant to be going to Bordeaux, so on a personal level, not getting to Bordeaux for the game was a real downer. Season high, well, I mean, it's been, regardless of losing to Ulster and regardless of what happens next week against Bordeaux, I can't really complain about the season, really. You know, you can't get to a semi-final, quarter-final, maybe another semi-final, whatever happens thereafter, and think that it's been rubbish because, you know, that's you just want to be in amongst the knockout stuff at the end, and if you can make one more than that, brilliant. But good. So on that token, beating Munster in Ireland, beating Wasps home and away, but it has to be beating Glasgow on the resumption of rivalry. The most anticipated game of rugby for 8 months. And to win it handsomely, I think, just does the job.
You know what it's like? These wee teams like to raise their game. It's, yeah.
Well, the thing is, John, we're still going to have some silverware at the end of the year. It's not to be sniffed at.
I don't know. Like, it's pretty old. It's probably quite whiffy.
hopefully just filled with port rather than anything more untoward.
I'm sure it's been filled with all sorts of things over the years.
Here we're back. Are we froze for a minute? Are we, did I disappear or was I still turning on?
You just disappeared.
I whirlpooled. How exciting. I think I need to find a way of connecting directly to the network. I was, So there we go. We're back anyway. I was saying, Sandy, you couldn't do in front of a crowd. That was my joke I made. I don't know if you caught that.
No, I missed that.
So it sounded better when I said it straight away after what you said. John, your season high and your season low for Glasgow.
Yeah, so the season gone by, I mean, in terms of lows, there was quite a few at the start of the season. It was a really, really bad start. Glasgow were losing game after game after game. Probably the biggest low, though, in terms of on the playing pitch, was the Leinster game. Not long before lockdown, where we got absolutely trounced. We got absolutely trounced, and for me, it was indicative of how far Glasgow had fallen, having only a few months previous been within a couple of bounces of the ball of beating Leinster and winning the title again, to then travel over there and get absolutely drubbed was really disappointing. And it kind of followed on that the main low of the season was actually the way the Dave Rennie era ended. Now, there was lots of talk about all the players Dave Rennie's brought through. There's been lots of talk about the way he's taken Glasgow forward on the pitch, but it was a season of going backwards and backwards quite quickly. And then there's lots of stuff has sort of started to come out afterwards about maybe the way the certain players were managed, the way certain players have been handled. And it has left a bit of a bitter taste, which is a shame, because he seems like a good guy, and he seems like he's obviously a very talented rugby coach. It's just a shame it ended this way. In terms of season highs, there was a couple of moments. Obviously, beating Edinburgh at Christmas was really good, but it's not really on our kind of list as the sort of top games. I think for most fans, seeing the way Glasgow stood up in Europe to some very, very good teams. There was obviously the bad result to La Rochelle, which we should have won, but the game down in Sale, where they were absolutely rampant. They were as good as I've seen Glasgow in Europe for many a year. And a lot of that was precipitated by the return of the Knack. So, you know.
Yeah. Was it like something like 20 seconds from kickoff? A few minutes for kickoff and he's straight over the line.
Yep.
Right in front of us as well. I mean, I always thought your season high would be the trip to the Arndale Centre. One of the most terrifying places I've ever been on earth. It was like the equivalent of Vegas.
It did have some three aisles of strange things that you don't need, but you're going to buy anyway.
No, I don't understand why you would need to theme a food court after the Titanic. Why that would even cause? Oh, let's theme this food court. What can we do? The Titanic, the ship that sank. That's what we'll do. We'll stick a McDonald's in the middle.
Exactly what we'll do.
Inexplicable. But no, that was good. I agree. I think those are good shouts. Very quickly, because I know John's got to get off later on tonight. So we'll do one. I've asked you to come up with your own awards. I've got mine. It's the Jim Hamilton Award for most likely to upset a former colleague in the next year or so in the media is John Barkley. He's probably already done it already, but that's where I'm going with it. Sandy, have you made up your own award, and who have you given it to?
Yeah, if I can do two, please, if you don't.
Go on, you go,
Maybe laugh. The Tetley's Bitter Award for sponsored by GizaJob.com also goes to John Barkley. And then the Daryl Marfo Award for hiding in plain sight goes to Mesolami Kunavula.
Very good.
Was Jake Valor?
It's easy for you to say.
They're in the same cave. Hide and seek champions 2020.
John, your awards.
So, yeah, I've got a couple here. So we've got the Carol Vorderman Award for timekeeping, which will be given to Rob Harley for his countdown against Edinburgh. We've got the Alex Dunbar Memorial for services to kicking, which obviously goes to Blair Kinghorn. Crimes Against Hairdressers, Tom Gordon. And then we've got the single-player boat race champion, which was Finn Russell.
I like that one. Yeah. Very good. All good suggestions. If you've got your own suggestions for some awards, get in touch. Let us know. We'll do them on the next podcast. And we're going to do on this next. We've got a bit of a jingle.
Well, we're low tie and we're low blow single. Get back on in the speedos. But I just want to know, did you see the legend that's Doogie Donnelly?
Yes, it's Where's Doogie Donnelly, where we ask you to get in touch with people that you have seen out and about loosely associated with Scottish rugby. We didn't have one at the start of the podcast, but we've had an email in live as we record from Brody Duncan, who says, "Hi, Cammy, et al." Or just et al. Now,
who's et and who's al?
You've got a look of an al about you, Sandy.
Okay.
So I'll be et. That's fine.
Brody says, long-time listener, first-time emailer, but I hope I'm not too late to contribute to tonight's podcast. You're not. We've got it live. Don't worry, Brody. This afternoon, I walked past Jim Hamilton on Princes Street. Never realised he was so tall. And I went to say that, love the podcast. Shame that Andy Good can be a bit of a... And then there's a naughty word.
Roman.
But at the last second, I saw a small child walking alongside him, which I assumed was his son. So all I got out was, love the podcast, and then some unintelligible babble, to which he gave me a funny look, confusedly said thanks, and went on his merry way. So have you almost accidentally said a horrible word in front of a former Scottish professional rugby player, only to stop because it was a child or a loved one nearby? Get in touch, let us know, and we'll feature it on the next bit of our next section of Where's Doogie Donnelly. We'll move straight on to this now. Yes, it's Hands in the Ruck. It's our Any Other Business section of the podcast. It's a chance to talk about rugby outside of Scotland or just generally what's been annoying us this week, be that rugby or otherwise. It can be nice. It can be nice to have some Hands in the Ruck. Maybe someone's gently cupping you in a pleasant place. Who knows? So it needn't be bad. This will get us banned off Facebook again, won't it?
Yep, that's it.
So we've got one off Twitter already. Someone tweeted me. I'm going to check if we've got any others. John, have you managed? Before we came on, you said you hadn't thought of any come to mind while we've been talking this evening.
Yeah, so it's quite funny actually that we've kind of been bantering away about the rivalry between Glasgow and Edinburgh, and it was interesting. What's kind of got me a wee bit pickled was the way that people have really kind of tried to generate a rivalry out of nothing. Like, lots of people have been saying, oh, I didn't want Edinburgh to win, I didn't want this, I didn't want that. And it's almost like we're trying to, I don't know, it feels like we're trying to create some sort of football thing out of nothing. You know, we've got two professional teams. That's not a rivalry. That's you know, that's two sides of the SRU same coin. And you know, without Edinburgh will for most Scottish fans be their second team. You know, most Glasgow fans, sorry. That was a bit of a slip there. Edinburgh will be the second team. Edinburgh for most Glasgow fans will, you know, Glasgow fans, except when it impacts Glasgow negatively, do not want Edinburgh to lose. So the whole nonsense comments that I've seen online about people being glad Edinburgh lost and, you know, they had it coming and, you know, I never thought I would want Ulster to win against a Scottish team. It's just tripe, guys. Shut up.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We've talked about this before. It's the... God love them. The SRUN bring Glasgow marketing departments work bloody hard to say there's a rivalry. But really, yeah. Like you said, most people, I mean, even the followers of, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, people that are fans of Glasgow and Edinburgh, I would suggest, where that's their primary, the way they come, are in the minority, I would think, overall in Scotland, because most people that pitch up at Murrayfield probably follow their club team. Because if you look at the attendances for Glasgow and Edinburgh, that's not, if you add those two together, that's not a full Murrayfield. And I don't mean that, Sandy. I'm not having a dig at Edinburgh's attendance, because we know where that on average that is a higher attendance than suggestion. Even when you remove, even with John, don't start. Even when you remove the big games at Murrayfield, they still have good attendance. Good attendance. They have a good attendance. But even if you add those together, it's what 20. You know, at best, you know, getting on for 20,000 night or 18,000. That's not Murrayfield. So the majority of people in, I would suggest the majority of people in Scottish rugby, actually Edinburgh and Glasgow are their second and third teams, one way or the other, or even their joint, even they might not even care that much. I think that's, most people will watch the 1872 to see the Scottish players.
See them internationals.
Yeah. Is that fair, Sandy? Am I being too?
No, I think you're. I mean, certainly anecdotally, I mean, I work with a guy who coaches at Leith Accies and hasn't a clue what's going on in professional rugby in Scotland. Literally nothing. And I talked to him about rugby, and he knows, he couldn't probably even tell you who the starting 15 is for either.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he's got no, and he's a switched on guy in terms of rugby. He knows what he's talking about, but just has no interest in professional rugby at that level. Yeah. And if that's if that's indicative of everybody else, then you're probably right. I mean, the rivalry is a strange thing. It is, because we're franchises that belong to the same, you know, owner. And I think we all get caught up in it occasionally. I mean, I know I do, so do the media teams. I mean, I remember that there was the Glasgow media team put out a tweet showing, I think it was travel guides to Moscow and when Edinburgh were in the Challenge Cup. And within a day it had been pulled because obviously somebody thought they had overstepped the mark. I laughed at that one. I thought that was pretty clever, to be honest, you know. And I think the guys across Edinburgh had a comeback, but you know, but it just got pushed to one side because they obviously thought that, nope, too far. You've too taken much. That too far.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's nice to have the friendly rivalry, but like you said, it is a bit manufactured, John. I think you're right. It's not going anywhere, but the one we've had off Twitter is from Craig Manson, who's been a long time listener to the podcast. I know Craig has said that his hands in the ruck is the artificial crowd noise that they played during the Ulster game. He says it was loud and awful. At least BT Sport tried to match the noise to the gameplay. It was just awful. Sorry, I'm getting old and loud noise hurts my hip. What I was wondering is, was it just Bruce Aitchison sat in the comms box with like 100 microphones lined up and they were just replicating? He was just cheering and it was just playing it, like, you know, on a slight delay to try and make it look like there's a crowd there.
Yeah, Bruce got a row for Dougie Vipe on for being too noisy in the run up to the start of the match.
Dougie's lovely as well. I always tell how Dougie made me a cup of tea over at Scotstoun. Legend.
Yeah,
claim to fame, John.
It's because I was absolutely freezing. It was brutally cold at Scotstoun. I was literally stuck to my chair, and Dougie went and got me a cup of tea. Top boy.
I don't think Bruce Aitchison's ever been quiet in his life.
No.
I think that's the reason why he's a stadium announcer. I think he's still, technically, I think he's still talking about the 97 Lions tier from our podcast, and he actually stopped. Just had to stop recording and...
Just, we'll pick him up.
Stop.
Was it 12 years till we go back? We'll pick him up again then.
My hands in the ruck. This is picking up on something we talked about, actually, something you talked about, Sandy, that I pulled you up on, but actually I've been talked around on it. You were talking about Dylan Hartley mourning about all his injuries and his poor fortune from his £1 million mansion and duck with a duck pond and a duck house on it. seen that much sympathy. That he was at it again on the new James Haskell podcast, which interest. Do you know they're being sued for making that podcast?
Oh, no.
Joe.ie, and this is public knowledge, so it's not like a private thing. Cause it was Joe.ie, because they used to do the Joe House of Rugby Joe podcast, and they've gone off and done their own one. So Joe is suing them.
Sweet.
For intellectual property theft, because they said that the new show is very similar to the Joe, the House of Rugby one, which it is. Although a court will determine whether or not that's true or not. However, he was on the House of Rugby talk, not House of Rugby, he was having a slip of the tongue. He was on the new James Haskell podcast, and there was a discussion, a clip put out on Twitter where it was Dylan Hartley and James Haskell essentially comparing injuries. And I think the intent of the discussion was to say, this is the attritional effect that it has on the body. But in actually what it became was a pissing contest. Oh. And that's the way it came across. Was I've played for England concussed. I've run out with my knee hanging off. You know, and I think from that point of view, you have very little sympathy, because they're not talking. I think the point I made to you, Sandy, is I've all well and good for guys who are platformed to talk about a lack of pastoral and aftercare with professional rugby players, saying they put the bodies on the line and then they're not looked after, and I'm sorted, I'm all right, Jack, but there's guys out there who are struggling to make ends meet because of their injuries and the long-term effects. I think if it's in those terms, I fully support them talking about it. If it's in the terms of I've been more injured than you have, I'm more crippled than you are, because that's what with the term, I don't use that term lightly, it's the way they were talking about it. If it's a willy waving contest, I don't think that's the right discussion in which the right kind of framework in which the discussion should be have. And that's kind of the way it was had. And Mike Bubbins was who's a Welsh comedian, people know Mike from the Socially Distanced podcast. He made a point which he got picked up by a lot of people. I think Mike had a point. He says, you know, everybody that's played rugby at any level will have long term effects on their body. I mean, you know, I played youth rugby, but I've still got my fingers are still not quite right for a couple of times I knack my fingers playing rugby. You know, that like they're still a wee bit stiff, and when it gets cold they get a wee bit sore. I've not got cauliflower ears, but I've got flat ears from playing in the cold for 2 years, and that's nowhere near some people that have played from, like my brother who's played from minis up to, you know, he's played at a reasonable level in England and he played for Berwick in Scotland. He's got, you know, he's shot. Do you know what I mean? He's in his early 30s. So Mike's point was everybody who plays rugby at any level, particularly if you're a forward, is going to come away with some long-term health impacts. And they haven't got the level of care. And in the past, guys who played rugby put their bodies on the line just in the same way. So boasting about it, it doesn't make you any better than any of those players. By all means, raise it as a welfare issue and pastoral and whatever, but just kind of, it's boring going, I've been more injured than you, is boring.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've heard any of these guys say, I feel for young players who've not, you know, their careers might be ended prematurely. Like you say, it's just, it's a bit, look at me. It's the old Monty Python sketch. I had to get up 4 hours before I went to bed and lick cesspit clean with tongue. It's war stories, you know. And if you're right, if it's a war story to prevent somebody else having to go to war, then great. But if it's just for cheap thrills and for clicks, it's not quite so impressive. Or because you're a wee bit bitter about the way things ended.
Yeah. Good. So there we go. We're all agreed. Should we have a show of hands?
Can I? One very quick hands in the rock for me.
Because go on, then.
Rather than how angry am I? Thing, I just wanted to say how good was Darcy Graham's tackle and reaction and turnover from Jacob Stockdale on Saturday. I think I've watched that particular part of the match about 15 times. I just think that was just phenomenal work, and almost makes up for everything else.
He's a number seven in a winger's body, isn't he?
Yeah.
You see, we've talked about it before, the way he hits the rucks.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Very impressive.
You know, very aggressive player, very impressive player.
On that note, did you happen to catch the highlights of Racing v Lyon and see Big Matteo Bass throw at 8?
No.
Scored the first try. Oh my golly gosh, this guy is a tank. He played relatively well by all kind of objective measures and scored the first try.
Was he started there, John? Was it? Did he
start? He started at 8, yeah.
He switched, hasn't he? I'm surprised. Yeah. It's no surprise really. He went and played in New York, and I've had a bagel in New York, and they are bloody delicious. So you can imagine, you spending 6 months eating nothing but bagels in New York, you're going to come away, you know. Think of what a croissant does to you. Imagine what a bagel does to you.
He was not a small cat either, was he? In the first instance. He scored the first try with a really nice loop off the tail. And one of the forums I follow, the first comment on it was, "Who does he think he is, Richie Vernon?"
The one thing I will pick up out of it just very quickly is the Owen Farrell tackle. And the only thing that's annoyed me about it, and I feel bad because it was a Telegraph writer, but the thing that constantly annoys me is people blaming rugby league for the way that Owen Farrell tackles, because he hasn't played rugby league since he was 13 or 14. And somebody said, "I think it's just a cultural issue." I was like, "Going, I don't think being from Lancashire
makes you attempt people.
People aren't born, you don't emerge from the womb being able to play rugby league. Do you know what I mean? It's not, unless Andy had him in the back garden, kind of like with a crash test dummy showing him how to take the head off people until he was 18 or something. Then I don't. It's not. It's a lazy excuse for somebody that has a very, very poor tackle technique and loses the head.
And like Novak Djokovic in his incident, it has been coming for years. Yeah. Here we are, and everybody's in uproar going, "Oh no, poor Owen, oh no," and the rest of us are going, "Yeah, he's deserved this for a long time."
A long time, yeah. I think at the point I put up, somebody had said, "Oh well, he's his disciplinary record isn't actually that bad." I was going, "Yeah, but that's kind of like saying, you know, this guy's murdered 300 people, but He's only been prosecuted for one. Somebody did it better. They said it's a bit like saying poor Al Capone was in prison for his tax affairs. Ignore all the other stuff.
If it wasn't proven, it didn't happen.
Aye. So on that note, that's it for this week's podcast. Thank you very much, everyone who's watched with us, watched along with us, and joined in with the comments. I don't know what we're doing next week. There's an Edinburgh European game coming up. We may be back with a podcast next week. We might have a week off and recharge our batteries. We'll let you know. Keep an eye out on Twitter and on the blog, and we'll post some news probably early next week or over the weekend as to whether or not we're going to come back and have one. Like I said, we've got some stuff planned for the Patreon in October, so please do sign up for that. You'll get an ad-free versions of the podcast as well. It helps us put out these live streams. And that's the reason we've started them up. And we do enjoy doing them, and people enjoy getting involved in the comments. But for the moment, it is goodbye from me and goodbye from Sandy and John.
Night, folks.
Night, guys.